Welcome to the Darien Cast. This is our second show, and today we're going to be doing a recap of all the exciting things that have happened this year and all of the shitty things that have happened this year, and basically make fun of everybody we can find along the way. I'm Darien,
that's
that other dude, that guy who you just heard, that was Steven.
That's me, hey. So let's hop into the year. It was a pretty exciting year for games, I'd say.
I'd agree.
One of the things that happened perhaps earliest in the year was really the Nintendo DS just really coming into its own as a console.
Yeah.
Just kicking some ass out there.
Yeah, it started in with new Super Mario Brothers coming out early this year, and then also with Brain Age being a huge success. It just really has started to dominate the industry. The figures I saw the other day say that 82 million units have been sold, which is just incredible for a system that's only been on the market for 2 years. Or, well, three years now.
Yeah, and then, of course, the DS Lite with this summer when it came out or whatever, just flying off the shelves. They couldn't keep them in stock. I mean, impressive for a little handheld console that everyone thought was going to be a huge flop when it came out.
I know. I mean, Everyone said it was just a gimmick system and no one would buy it, but it's had really solid software support. New Super Mario Bros. By itself is, like, absolutely not gimmicky. It barely uses the touchscreen capabilities at all. Basically, they're used for menu selections. And it plays like a classic Mario game, and it looks brilliant. If the system continues to have software like that on it, it's going to continue to do really well.
Yeah, and I think some of the games now are starting to really use the touchpad in creative ways. I think maybe some of the early titles it was kind of funky, but have you played Elite Beat Agents yet?
I haven't. I've heard about it, though. Is it
good? I was playing it in the store the other day. I'm a sucker for rhythm games anyway, even though I have none. But I like the games, and Elite Beat Agents is really fun. I mean, if you haven't heard about it or you haven't played it, essentially it's a rhythm game. What you do is you play with the stylus on the DS on the touchscreen, and these little circles appear. There's like a little circle and then a big circle surrounding the little circle, and the big circle closes in on the little circle, and right when they're just about aligned, you gotta tap that spot on the screen to make the beat go. And the Elite Beat Agents are these guys who go around using music to, like, save people. It's kind of funky. It's, of course, I mean, very clearly a Japanese game, but I guess in the Japanese game, the Beat Agents were male cheerleaders, which they figured wouldn't quite translate to America. So they turned them into these Men in Black kind of guys. So it's a pretty kooky game, but just a lot of fun, really cool rhythm game. You got to do things like sometimes got to hold a note by dragging the stylus across the screen to another spot in time with the music. And really, really interesting, creative game.
Yeah, that does sound like a lot of fun. Another thing that used the stylus, interestingly, was last year's Nintendogs, if you'll recall, which basically you just use the stylus to pet your dog and to groom your dog and to call him to go to certain places on the screen and throw objects to him. It's much better than the earlier DS games, which basically used the stylus so that in the middle of the game, while you're jumping from platform to platform, all of a sudden it can interrupt you and make you draw a symbol to open the door or whatever.
Right. I mean, so clearly it's taken developers a little while to get the hang of it, but and of course just recently Square Enix announced that Dragon Quest, whatever the heck number they're up to, 9? Dragon Quest 9?
9
is going to be, of course, all previous 8 Dragon Quests, exactly the same game, but people still love them. Most popular game series in Japan still, even more popular than Final Fantasy, going to DS exclusively, apparently.
That's
a move
true.
From PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 to the DS. That's a huge thing for the Japanese gaming market, which is still a very large market.
And it's a huge thing for Nintendo. It'll be the first time in its history that Square Enix has moved a core franchise game to a handheld system instead of keeping them on the home consoles and moving corollary games like the Dragon Quest Monsters series to the handhelds.
Yeah, so a pretty big deal. Obviously, you know, Square sort of has a tendency just to front run, just pick whichever console they think is the biggest, and apparently, I mean, DS, clearly they see the market there. It would seem to me that maybe they're not sure who's going to win the Wii PS3 war, because I mean clearly the Xbox is not going to ever take off in Japan. It just doesn't look like it's going to happen.
No. So Microsoft is throwing incredible amounts of money into it, and getting absolutely no return. I mean they're hiring as the voice actors for the Japanese localization on the titles. They're hiring like big name Japanese voice actors and doing these huge promotions for these games, and still nobody's buying them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they just don't have. I mean, they don't have Final Fantasy. They don't have quirky puzzle games, really. They have great shooters and action games and those sorts of American role-playing games like Oblivion, but those just aren't going to sell that well. Those just aren't what's popular in Japan. I don't know. They should just start buying Japanese developers, honestly.
I can't disagree with you.
I mean, how much did they spend for Rare, and what the hell did they get for it? Perfect Dark Zero? Come on.
They got Viva Pinata.
Yeah, Viva Pinata. That's. I mean, yeah, I do think Viva Pinata looks neat, but I don't think it's going to really help them win over the Japanese market.
It might. It's probably the of all the titles on the Xbox 360 currently, Viva Pinata probably has more appeal in Japan than any of the others.
Yeah, that's not really saying a whole lot.
No, it isn't, but I mean, it's a start. Who knows? We got Banjo-Kazooie has been announced on the X360, and that series has done fairly well in Japan, so that could help.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a killer app in Japan, though.
No, I doubt it. The X360 is still going to be a vanishingly small number of units sold in Japan, no matter what they do, because.
Well, they could get Dragon Quest X or
Well, that, yeah.
Final Fantasy, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, with their current
Yeah,
lineup and their current
their
direction,
chance.
if they bought Square Enix, then yeah, absolutely, they'd start to be huge in Japan. There's no alternative.
This is what they should do. I think Microsoft has well more cash on hand than the market capitalization of Square Enix, so they could just easily buy up the company if they wanted.
Well, it wouldn't be the worst thing they've done lately, but hey.
So there's not going to be any more E3, or at
Yeah.
least not as we've known it.
Yeah, the ESA has evidently was getting pressured by a bunch of big players who were tired of spending a ton of money to attract hanger-on journalists who basically just wanted free stuff. So they've pressured the ESA into making it much smaller. It's going to be an invitation-only event, and it's not going to be held in a convention hall at all. Only a few people are going to come. So that's kind of
Yeah, it's
hit
kind of
me
a
with an
shame.
age.
I
Yeah.
mean, I have been in the past one of those hanger-on pseudo-journalists
I was hoping to be in
who
the future.
attended and just showed up, enjoyed the free liquor and food quite a bit, enjoyed all the laser lights and free demos. But yeah, certainly there was no real re. It was nothing like a trade show. It was like a giant 4 or 5 day long party. Most of the time, when you go to actual press conferences, they don't give you awesome free swag, which you can then go sell on eBay for good coin. I would always do that, by the way. They would give you these exclusive tote bags and junk like that that I have no use for. But people on eBay, man, I remember selling like a Nintendo laptop bag for like $150. Just ridiculous.
Lordy.
I sold like Final Fantasy press kits and stuff on eBay. It was a nice little way to make some cash. I'm kind of sad to see that go.
I believe it. I mean,
But
you can sell anything on eBay that has a Final Fantasy brand on it for like 8 digits of cash. It's ridiculous.
yeah, this was my thinking when I put up a piece of cardboard that said Final Fantasy with some press releases inside of it, and a CD-ROM of exclusive art. I don't know, man. It was ridiculous, but people did buy it. I think I got like $25 for that.
Lordy.
Now, you think that this is a bigger deal than just the end of the show, don't you?
I do think so. I think it's going to have some pretty serious repercussions in the industry. It means the. Well, E3 was the primary revenue stream for the ESA in the first place. That's basically where the ESA made all of its money. And the
And the
ESA doesn't.
ESA, for people who aren't
Oh,
familiar with
yeah.
industry acronyms, it's the Entertainment Software Association, sort of the lobby group for the games industry, really.
And with the ESA having to cut back as much as it's going to do without this revenue coming in, that's going to be an awful lot less visibility and an awful lot less promotion of games-related causes in the media. And so perhaps the scary people who are always lobbying to have video games banned are going to be able to make more headroom with their causes than they are now because the ESA won't be right there with $1 trillion to fight it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't. I mean, I obviously one of the reasons that this E3 got canceled because it was so expensive. So obviously ESA was probably making some pretty decent money off of it. But I gotta imagine that Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo and EA and all these other huge companies that are making, hundreds of millions a year on this aren't going to just let their lobby group wither and die and allow their games to get banned in, civilized nations.
One could always hope so, but at the same time, industry executives do have quite the history of being short-sighted. So we'll see what happens.
True. But I mean, hey, it's not Germany, right?
It's not Germany where they have a law currently, a currently proposed law, it has not been enacted yet, that will institute jail sentences for anyone who enacts harm on representations of human beings.
So if you kill people in Grand Theft Auto, you're actually going to do time.
Yep, and if you develop games that involve killing people, then you can go to jail for that. I think that also applies. I think it also applies to people who market the games, and it's just ridiculous.
That's a sensible law, of course. Let's
Well,
punish people for pretending to kill people.
evidently some kid like shot another kid a couple of months ago in Germany, and he was a real big fan of Counter-Strike. So clearly, the connection is obvious, isn't it? He played Counter-Strike, so he became a murderer.
It's a killing simulator.
It pretty much is. It's training us all to become serial killers. I can't see
Yeah.
how it's not. I
I
mean,
mean, using a mouse and keyboard is exactly like firing a sniper rifle or an
it
assault
is.
rifle.
It
Precisely the
is.
same. Well, I
And I
think
mean,
another big news story of the year, at least from my mind, was the introduction of a lot more stuff for download, episodic content. Valve announced that the Half-Life expansion pack, Half-Life 2 expansion pack, was going to be released as a series of episodes, and they released the first one, which is first the worst name of all time, Half-Life 2 Episode 1. So there's like Half-Life 2, and there's also Half-Life 2 Episode 1, which is the sequel to Half-Life 2. Anyway, I guess Half-Life 2 is Episode 0. I'm not really clear, but they're going to release two more of those, and I think they cost, what did they cost? 20, 30 bucks?
I
I
think it
think it was like
was,
20.
I think it was 30.
I don't think it was
20 or
quite that
30, I don't
much.
remember.
It was a little expensive. The Half-Life games have always been, I mean, they charge a premium for them because they know people will play them, and it's a fairly short game, like 5 or 6 hours. But you just download it. I guess you can also buy it in the store, but who does that? So you just download it from
I
Steam.
didn't.
Yeah, me neither. Give them your money, and then you've got 5 or 6 hours. And it was supposed to be this year, but it got delayed till next year. We're gonna get episode 2, and then eventually episode 3. It's sort of rounding out, I guess, the Half-Life 2 story, because Half-Life 2 ended on a huge cliffhanger. But it was kind of fun, actually. I'm kind of interested in where this goes. There was also some other ones. The Sin guys over at Ritual released a Sin episode, but I understand the company may not be releasing any more because it may be having some financial trouble. So I guess maybe that wasn't a huge hit. But Half-Life 2 Episode 1, I think, got a pretty good reception. Really good reviews. It's a really fun 5 or 6 hours. Really innovative and adds a lot to Half-Life 2, I thought.
Yeah, I personally thought Episode 1 was actually better than the original Half-Life 2, if shorter. It didn't contain any of the parts of Half-Life 2 that really just I didn't like. I didn't like the vehicle levels in Half-Life 2. I don't like vehicle levels in first-person shooters anyway because of my whole minigame fixation that we discussed last time. But Half-Life 2 Episode 1 didn't have any of that. It was just all one coherent game mechanic the whole way through.
Yeah, though to be fair, I did love a few of the vehicle levels in Half-Life 2, especially the boat level. It's like my favorite part of the game, along with, of course, Ravenholm.
My favorite part of the game, I think, was gonna would have to be the Anti-Citizen 1 chapter, where you finally get back into City 17 and you start ripping through it and really heading right for the Citadel. I liked
That
that part.
that is a pretty cool level. It's also we get the squad-based combat
Yeah.
really takes off. That's kind of neat.
I think
But we
that's one
also, I
thing.
think, what's that?
I think that's one thing I liked about Episode 1 was that it was all set inside City 17. And I personally am very fond of urban settings in games. And I don't
Yeah.
think we see enough urban stuff. And I didn't. I mean, the game play in Half-Life 2 when you were out on, like, Highway 19, just out in the middle of nowhere, was still good, but the setting didn't do it for me. It's just like I'm out in the middle of this big field fighting dudes. And I'd much rather
Yeah.
be in the city.
One thing I like about City 17 setting too was it was kind of dreary, but it wasn't like brown and black,
Oh
and
no.
you could actually see blue skies once in a while and lights, and
It was
it
beautiful.
wasn't a happy place, but yeah, it wasn't so drab and dark like most first-person shooter environs are. But you know what?
When I first
Yeah, what's
downloaded the
that?
demo and I stepped out of the train station into the square of the city at the very beginning of the game for the first time,
Yeah.
it was really striking just how pretty this not pretty like in some sort of pristine, beautiful fantasy land way, but it just there was color. And it looked vibrant, and it looked like an actual setting where people lived, you know? It didn't just look like big industrial blocks down a hallway.
Yeah, exactly. And just even beyond, I think, going back to the digital downloads, episodic stuff, we really saw people starting to take advantage of like the 360 marketplace with a lot more mini games and small things you can buy. And I think this is going to represent a sort of shift in the way that people play. I mean, look at how much attention the Uno download on the Xbox 360 got. Like, all of a sudden everyone's playing Uno again. You can pick a cards for $3 or whatever, but... And also, I know for me personally, I was a big Oblivion fan, and also on the PC, they were selling, Bethesda was just going ahead and selling, you know, your horse, armor for your horse for, you know, $1.50 or something, and a bunch of people complained about it, but, I mean, it's $1.50, that's really like a huge amount of money to you, you can't really afford to play playing. I mean, how do you afford to buy an Xbox 360 or a PC that can run Oblivion if $1.50 is going to really, like, set you back? I mean, so I think it's kind of cool. You buy a couple of new levels, and they've been pretty good about releasing, you know, quite a few of them. You buy new settings and housing for your character stuff for $1 or $2 at a go. It's, I think it's an interesting way of delivering more content rather than a full expansion pack.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would get bummed about it if I bought a game and then I found out that pretty much in order to get through the game, I was going to have to buy these extras from the main company. That would piss me off.
Yeah,
but if I played the game now and I can get these extras for some additional money, get some more play out of it, that wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, I think that's cool. And I mean, it's sort of like what Sony was proposing with Gran Turismo HD, where essentially they'd give you only a few cars to start with, and if you're buying new car, I think they've revamped that idea. I haven't really been following it that closely, but I mean, that kind of thing, certainly publishers see the money. And yeah, the instant they start releasing crippled games and charging $60 for them is... But anyone who's played Oblivion knows that there's no shortage of content in that game. You could have started playing it when it was released early this year and still be playing it, not seeing everything there is to see. So I don't think you can really claim you got shortchanged if you bought that one.
No, I wouldn't imagine. So speaking of Oblivion, it got re-rated to M from T because...
That's right.
Because of a third-party hack for it that made naked female models in the game.
Wow, I mean, it's just as insane as the hot coffee mod, which also required you to hack Grand Theft Auto San Andreas in order to see naked cartoon women. Which, apparently, seeing naked cartoon women is a real problem for people. I'm not...
Yeah, they seem to be really offended by the idea. I'm not really clear.
I mean, the difference with the Grand Theft Auto hot coffee thing was that the content was already in the game. You just had to use a third-party tool to unlock it.
Right.
You couldn't. You had to like use a Game Shark or a mod on the PC. But yeah, I'm not really sure why it's a big deal in the first place. Especially for a game that's already rated mature, why it's that huge of a problem. And yeah, the idea of re-rating games because of third-party tools is insane.
It's completely insane. And I know when that happened, right when this whole big thing broke and Oblivion got re-rated to M, I know that Blizzard disabled the ability to reskin the models in World of Warcraft. Just so people wouldn't put out any more nude patches than already existed and get the game rated up to M.
And yeah, I mean, that's too bad. Certainly, companies shouldn't be penalized for what users do.
No, not at all. The whole idea is absurd.
Yeah, I mean, the game rating system has never been particularly good to start with. And I mean, in a lot of ways, I think it's actually worse than the movie rating system, what's acceptable and what's not. I mean, honestly, Grand Theft Auto... Now there's a sex scene, so it would have been re-rated from mature to adults only? Seriously? I mean, how does that make any sense whatsoever?
I don't... I mean, Grand Theft Auto is a game that's basically about driving around and murdering people in as many creative and violent and bloody ways as you possibly can. And that's okay in an M-rated game, but if you put in a naked woman, it goes up to AO?
Yeah, screwy rating system. I mean,
priorities seem a little bit whacked, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and just nonsensical. I mean, people always say that, you know, in American media, the ratings are more sensitive toward nudity and sex and violence, which is probably true when you compare it to
definitely true
the rest of the world. But wow, that goes way. I mean, you can show nudity in R-rated movies. It's not going to get you the NC-17 rating the way it apparently does in video games. That's so weird. I mean, because really, if we're going to pretend that only 17-year-olds can buy mature games, and there's no problem if they see the cartoon nudity. But I think part of the problem is that, you know, the games rating system is barely enforced.
Yeah.
I guess some retailers card people. I don't know, I'm not 14, so it's not really an issue for me.
I've never been of the age where I needed to care. I've always just, if I want to buy a game, I go buy a game.
Right. Never come up. But I guess maybe for some people it is a problem. Well, you mentioned Blizzard and World of Warcraft. I think another big story this year has to just be the continued dominance of World of Warcraft in the massive multiplayer space. I mean, how many people are playing it now? 7 million worldwide?
It's up above 7 million, but I don't think it's to 8 million yet.
And no expansion this year, no expansion the year previous. It's been 2 years since the game's come out, and Blizzard hasn't. I mean, they've added a lot of new content just for free, just via the patches, but it's pretty impressive that the game has been so dominant for such a long time in that space. It's,
Yeah, it is.
I mean, really exceeded anything the old King EverQuest ever did.
Oh yeah, EverQuest topped out at a few hundred thousand players. And World of Warcraft launched at, like, it sold 1 million units in a week or something like that. It was ridiculous.
And it's just impressive that they keep adding new players. I don't know where they're finding the player base. I guess in different countries is a big part of it. It's been successful all over the world, which is pretty surprising because it's sometimes hard to crack some of those Asian markets. I mean, it's really popular in China, for instance. I think it's tough for other MMOs to get in there
It
because
is.
there are a lot of Asian MMOs that I think kind of are more tailored to that region's interest and. Warcraft has always been, I guess Warcraft and Blizzard games in general have always been popular around the entire world. And certainly StarCraft and Diablo are really popular in Asia, so I guess that helps.
I am impressed that World of Warcraft was able to compete with Lineage and Lineage 2 so successfully in the Asian market, though.
Yeah, considering just how entrenched they were.
Yeah, and they just dominated the entire MMO industry in all of Asia. And World of Warcraft comes along and just kind of like sweeps them under the rug. And it's like, okay, you guys are done.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because World of Warcraft really has just got rid of most of the annoying parts about MMOs, and Blizzard has worked pretty hard at when things haven't worked in the game, making them better. The game is certainly much better now than it was 2 years ago when it first came out,
Absolutely.
and
Absolutely.
they haven't made you buy an expansion yet to take advantage of that new those new improvements.
And looking forward to the Burning Crusade, which is coming out next month and will be the first paid expansion for the game, it doesn't seem like Blizzard's going to start doing that because all of the changes that the expansion introduces to the system, all of the reworked, the stuff that didn't work before that's being made better, you'll get whether you buy the expansion or not. The only stuff that the expansion gives you is new actual zones and dungeons and things to go do.
Will you be able to level past 60 if you buy the expansion or not?
You will need the expansion to do that.
Okay, so essentially what the expansion is going to, it's just for continued progress in the game.
Exactly.
But there's still a lot of content that I think most people probably haven't yet seen that they could continue to work on conceivably if they didn't want to buy the expansion. I mean, the
Yeah,
high-end
absolutely.
dungeons have not been done by many people yet. So it's interesting. What do you think of any of the, I mean, next year looks like we have a whole bunch of more MMOs coming out to sort of try and cash in on just the success of the market in general, and particularly WoW.
I think a lot of them look like we have a lot of things like Pirates of the Burning Seas coming out, which I know you and I were looking at a while ago, which are just taking a completely different angle on the MMO market. It's not going to be just World of Warcraft with different models.
Right.
So I think that could do pretty well, but on the other hand, we have Vanguard coming out at the same time as the Burning Crusade, and I can't imagine that's going to be very successful, especially launching right then, since it'll basically it's competing directly with World of Warcraft. They're both in the fantasy adventure dungeony setting, but right now is just not the right time to do that. I can't imagine it's going to get anything like the amount of business they want.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what is it that Vanguard's going to offer me, or Lord of the Rings Online, or any of these other upcoming games. What are they going to offer me that World of Warcraft doesn't? What are you're not giving me a new setting. Are you going to give me a radically new gameplay? It doesn't really look like it. So why should I go start playing that game?
Well, with Lord of the Rings, their big selling point clearly is the Lord of the Rings. This is a Tolkien game. I
Which
know,
is
I
why you
know.
can play a mage, or I'm sorry, a lore master
A lore master fool, get it right.
who can shoot fireballs and summon pets to do his bidding and without ever using magic. I mean, come on, they didn't really. I don't know. It's like they built a pretty decent World of Warcraft, or I'm sorry, a pretty decent Middle-earth setting, and then threw it out once they decided to make character classes just to go with the good old Dungeons and Dragons or EverQuest character classes. Kind of
Yeah.
confusing. I don't
Yeah,
remember.
that
I
is a bit
just don't
strange.
remember many bards roaming around Tolkien's works.
Some of the dwarves in The Hobbit could conceivably have been called minstrels. I mean, there were a lot of music scenes in that book, but
True. I mean,
yeah.
that is a good point. There's a lot of music in the books, but
The lore masters are pretty much out there. There was. And the justification for them is really bad because it tells you all at once, if you look at the questions page on the website, it has this thing where it's like, can I play a mage? And then they say, no, magic is special in Middle-earth, and there are only a very few wizards. But we have this lore master class that's exactly the same. You just don't get to call yourself a mage.
Right, it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, I think it would have been more interesting if it had just said, you know what, no, we don't have any magic classes. You can use a melee character, you can use a ranged character who fires projectile weapons, but yeah, no magic. That
I
might
can
have been interesting.
see.
That might have, in fact, set it apart from every other fantasy MMO.
Yeah. I can see where a healer class really would have been necessary. I think they did need to come up with some way of working that in, unless they were
Well, I
going
don't
to.
know. Make him a medic or first aid person or something. I
Yeah.
don't know. I mean,
Well,
because, you know, the books have, like, herbs and crap that heal people. You throw that
Yeah.
in there.
There would have been definitely different ways of doing it rather than just, oh, here are your healing spells. We'll put them on the bard.
Right. Well, I am excited. You mentioned Pirates of the Burning Sea very briefly. I'm really excited for that because it doesn't seem like much of an RPG at all. I guess there's some character progression, but it's not at all the normal kind of you gain skills and stuff. But I mean, a lot of it's going to focus around sailing around a ship and being a merchant or a pirate or a navy officer and ship combat with some land combat and stuff. It looks really cool. I'm excited. I like those kinds of games anyway. You like trading games where you buy and sell resources and move them around.
Yeah, the economic angle really appeals to me. I hope it's going to be doable with a fair minimum of ship-to-ship combat because that sort of thing does tend to put me to sleep. But
Well, I imagine they're gonna make it fairly fast-paced. I think the complaint with those games tends to be that the naval combat and like those sim games is just slow as all get out. So I imagine that they if they want to appeal to a mass audience, they can't have it be like the slow, creaky kind of. I'm expecting more like Master and Commander kind of action where you move around fairly maneuverable ships and you don't have to constantly like spend 3 minutes reloading between each shot. Let's hope anyway, or I'm gonna be done with it pretty soon too.
I don't know. Even if combat is like that, if it's fairly avoidable and you can basically just set yourself up as some sort of merchant prince, I might still be down with it. Because I really like looking on the website, I really like what they've talked about the economy, how it's going to be so big and player driven and all that. And if that works out, that's going to appeal to me.
Yeah, I know we've talked before that World of Warcraft, our favorite game, is the auction house game. We buy resources and sell them at higher prices.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite thing, of course, is on the World of Warcraft message boards, where people complain that that's somehow cheating and should be banned.
I know. I know. It's like, oh, price gouging should be banned because that's not fair to the rest of us. And I'm like, dude, get there first.
Right.
Honestly.
That's the whole point of the auction house.
Yeah,
Yeah, that cracks me up. I like that.
and the people who say that it's not fair to charge for enchants and lockpicking and things.
Right.
It's like, oh, just because I can't do it doesn't mean you have to charge me. I'm like, well, no, it doesn't mean I have to, but it means you have to pay.
The concept of scarcity of services is lost on. Well, you know, to be fair, the average World of Warcraft player probably has not studied a lot of economics, so.
No, I would say probably not.
Right, well, let's shift gears back a little bit to talk about more hardware accessories. This is something that you said you want to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, I have sitting in front of me a Logitech G15 keyboard, which is one of these fancy gaming keyboards, and it has a ton of buttons and an LCD panel on it that shows vital statistics for games. And it's sort of gotten me thinking about all of the gaming hardware accessories that are available today, like this and the Nostromo keypad with its crazy buttons and joypads and things built into it, and how there's sort of an emerging market as games get more competitive for this sort of hardware edge.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, definitely. I mean, there's certainly people now, actual professional gamers. Not many of them, but there are, and it's sort of been on the fringes for a while. I can remember back in the days of Doom, people trying to sell you like special mouse pads or whatever the heck. But yeah, I think it's definitely getting more commonplace now. I'm seeing these things in Best Buy and Walmart and stuff.
And now you can get these special optical mouses with like a 2000 by 1400 resolution on the sensor, and it's laser illuminated, and it's like some crazy precision mouse, and you can change the sensitivity on the fly, so you can switch from sniper aiming to running around. It's really getting intense.
Well, I saw there pretty recently for the PC world, a company released, I'm not joking, a gaming Ethernet adapter.
Really?
It's
Never
yeah,
heard of this. What's it do?
I think it's mostly snake oil. Allegedly, it reduces your latency because it offloads some of the network overhead from the CPU. It has like a dedicated processor on it that supposedly will speed up everything. And the actual like test results that independent parties have done don't really show much of anything. So it's probably,
Yeah.
but it's like $200 for an Ethernet adapter, which is that's a lot of money for a NIC, but. I mean, there
Yeah.
you go. Certainly, it's a market that people think is growing big.
That's definitely on my snake oil list. I mean,
Yeah, I was.
most latency is caused by the time it takes signals to get from one place to another. It's not caused by any sort of weird CPU
Yeah.
load.
Well, and they're not claiming they're going to drop your ping by 100 milliseconds, but they're talking like, oh, well, 25 millisecond difference, which seems pretty unlikely to me.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one.
We've also seen a lot more accessories being accepted on consoles, I think. Stuff like the DDR dance pads, the Dance Dance Revolution pads. Those are really popular. Guitar Hero on the PS2 is big. With Guitar Hero 2 just came out, and Guitar Hero comes with a guitar. You get a guitar for Guitar Hero 2, that kind of stuff. I remember there was a time when accessories or peripherals for the consoles were like total gimmicks and only had one or two games that supported them out
Like the
there,
power
so.
pad.
Oh God,
Remember
the
the
power
power
pad.
pad?
The power pad. I think even worse than that though was Rob the robot for the NES.
He was
The
so
little
cool,
robot.
though.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
the one game he worked with.
Yeah, useless as hell. Useless as hell, but at least he was cute.
Yeah, but nowadays it seems like there's a lot more of these. The iToy on the PS2 is another one. Stuff like headsets for the Xbox. I know those are, if you're playing on live, you're gonna be using the headset. And these things, I don't know. I think they're pretty common, and it's kind of interesting that we're willing to accept this more and more.
Well, I think it's because traditional gaming styles are getting more and more just done to death. And that's a lot of what we're seeing with the popularity of the DS and going into the Wii, starting really next year since it's still basically unavailable, is changes in how we play games because we've been playing games for 25 years now, basically, and they're all the same, fundamentally.
Yeah, I mean the last real shift was the analog stick on the game console, so we could do 3D platformers. But other than that, yeah, things haven't changed a whole lot since the NES days in terms of our input. We just added 3D and picked up a couple new genres. But I
Added
have to
some
agree.
buttons.
I think because we're getting such diminishing returns now in terms of graphics. Yeah, the PS3 and the 360 look great in high def, but the difference between the Xbox and the Xbox 360 is nowhere near the difference between the NES and the SNES. Or the
Yeah.
Master System and the Genesis, or the Atari and the NES. We've hit a wall where we're not going to be able to just constantly sell things with new and better graphics every time. I think once the high def transition is over with, you won't be able to use that as a big selling point anymore. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, there's only so much resolution you can squeeze out of that screen. So
Yeah.
basically, all you can do is add more polygons and anti-aliasing and crap, and that's not really that noticeable.
No, not at all. I mean, and you also run into that whole, they call it the uncanny valley. The idea that when you start making things lifelike, humans are fine accepting cartoony characters as being, we accept them as looking normal. But when you start animating human characters that look really close to us without quite being close to us, the things that are off, they seem really off-putting. I've already noticed that a lot in the Xbox 360 games, where the models look really good, but there's just something not quite right about them when they're talking or interacting. They look kind of dead and lifeless. And I'm trying to judge them more like they were human actors, but they're not. They're still animated, and so there's just something that creeps me out a little bit about them. As much as I love Gears of War, when there's the cut screens, the people look, man, they look dead to me. They're just, it kind of creeps me out a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree.
And then, when I play with my 5-polygon character on Wii Bowling, it doesn't bug me at all. It's just their little, cartoon characters with drawn-on eyes. They look like their faces are two-dimensional.
That was one thing that really impressed me several years ago when Castlevania: Lament of Innocence came out on the PlayStation 2, was that these characters, they're not cartoony characters, they're human-looking characters, but they don't have that problem going on. They really do seem real. Which says to me, on the one hand, that it's not more graphics power that you need to make these realistic human characters. It's just more care spent in developing them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you have to really want them to. Like, again, I think that especially if you move to high def and you get better detail on the characters, you have to spend even more attention to them.
Yes, I think you're right.
And, you know, one thing I wanted to mention that I didn't think of until just now, and I was thinking about it earlier today, was the idea that one thing I think that is the DS has going for it and the Wii will also have going for it is because they don't have as great graphics as the other consoles, it doesn't cost nearly as much to make games for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're developing Final Fantasy whatever for the PS3, you're going to have to develop high-def graphics and spend a lot of time animating them. And, you know, that's going to cost you, you know, tens of millions of dollars at least, maybe not, you know, maybe even running into hundreds of millions for some games. That's expensive. Dragon Quest IX on the DS is not going to cost as much, I'd imagine, to make as DQ8 did.
And I imagine it'll have a substantially shorter development time also, because you don't need to spend 4 billion years animating these 400,000 trillion polygon characters. You just, your screen is only 2.5 inches across, so it doesn't take that many polygons to animate it well.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why, that's the big reason that these are going to be cheaper to make. And with these sort of simpler, less complex, less realistic games, you get a bigger return on your profit. I think that's one thing that certainly the game industry is going to keep looking for is more and more ways to make money. Because once you start investing too much into games, you start running this sort of movie studio problem where you can't take any risks at all. Mm-hmm. You have to develop something you know is going to be a big hit. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's less innovation in games now than there used to be, because you know, EA can't sink a ton of money into a Madden game and have it be a flop.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just costs them way too much money. You can sink, you know, a smaller amount into a Wii game or a DS game and have it be a mild success, and find some niche because, yeah, you didn't spend as much. So you can target smaller audiences, smaller demographics. Nintendo can release a game like Brain Age that's mainly, you know, aimed at more like middle-aged non-gamers, and it turned out to be a runaway hit, but Nintendo could take that risk with that game because it wasn't going to cost them a ton to produce.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think one of the problems the game industry has suffered from in the last 10 years or so has been that the rising costs have really caught up with them, and the rising development times, and it's much harder to release something that's innovative these days just because it's too much of a risk. Just because
right.
the people with the money want you to make something just like what everybody else made, so it'll sell.
Yeah, and we know that Madden 2006 sold, 100 billion copies or whatever. So let's make Madden 2007 a little different, but not too different. We can't get too risky. But of course, you look what EA did with Madden on the Wii, and they totally redid the control scheme to take advantage of the Wii. And you know, I think that's something that's kind of cool. They can do that because, obviously they already done a lot of development work for that Madden game, but. You know, they don't have to have the same level of graphics on the Wii that they did for the 360 version of Madden.
Yeah.
In fact, they gave it to, I think, EA Canada to just deal with it because it's not going to be as big of a flagship title. And I think that's something else that we see going toward the rising cost of video games, especially console games.
Mm-hmm.
Like $60 a pop now is sort of the retail thing for the 360. And I don't know, is that also the same on the PS3? What are they going for?
It is. The PS3 games are also retailing at $60 for full-price titles. The Wii is still holding down at $50.
Yeah.
I think that might be the benefit of long experience on Nintendo's part, because traditionally audiences have been very resistant to pricing video games above $50, and this won't be the first time that a new console has come out and launched with games above that price, and they just don't sell because people look at that and they're like, $60 is just too much.
Yeah, I mean, that $60, that is a lot of money when you think about having to shell out $60 for a game.
It is.
You know, I play a lot of PC games, and they've kind of crept up toward 50 now. They're traditionally around, you know, 40. Really in the $30 to $40 range. They're like cheaper than console games just because I think, you know, they also don't have to pay a license fee and that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
They're moving up there too as their budgets go up. And strangely, the PC market's kind of shrinking, especially in comparison with the console and insanely enough, the mobile market, which is just killing everything right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, and it limits your purchases. Especially my new purchases. I'm much less likely to go buy a game the week it comes out. It's going to cost me $60 instead of $40 or even $50. It's just something psychological about paying more than $50 for something.
Right. That's exactly it. I mean, part of the reason for the success of the original PlayStation, I mean, we can talk about memory size on CDs as compared to whatever, but a lot of the reason it got popular was because when the N64 launched, the games were like $90 a piece.
And yeah, it's ridiculous.
It really held the market down, and here comes the PlayStation. They're like, yeah, our games start at 40. And people went that way.
Go down from there because, you know, the media is not ever expensive for us. So you can sell old PlayStation 1 games for $20 back in the day. And, you know, Nintendo was never really able to get cartridges that cheap just because the media was so expensive.
Nintendo also charged much more for licensing fees at the time than Sony did. That was another advantage that Sony had.
Yeah, I think Nintendo's kind of learned its lesson from the N64.
I think probably. I mean, so Nintendo's... No, go ahead. I was going to say that Nintendo's focus since the N64 has been on making consoles much simpler and cheaper to develop for, because the N64 was, in addition to being expensive, was just hard to work with.
Yeah, and that's what I don't understand about Sony's strategy with the PS3, just switching to this totally new cell architecture that nobody has any experience working with at all, and just really demanding a lot out of their developers. And I think it's part of the reason there's what, one good PS3 launch game? You got Resistance, and that's it? Is there anything else on that console anyone's excited about? That's a pretty crummy launch lineup. And I mean, it's part of it's because no one's got it. No one's figured out how to work the damn thing. They don't can program for it yet.
That's part of it. I think another part of it is just that the industry is not confident about the PlayStation 3. We have a lot of titles, like we mentioned earlier, with Dragon Quest IX going exclusive to the DS. I think that's not just because the PS3 is going to be so expensive and difficult to develop on. I think it's also because Square Enix looks at it and they're like, it's $600. I mean, it's going to sell a small number of units compared to what else is on the market, so we're not going to commit our main moneymakers to this system. And that, I think, is a real killer for Sony.
Yeah, I have to agree. We talk, I think, all night about how much Sony botched the PlayStation 3 just from almost every level. It just seems like they're taking a page out of Nintendo's playbook circa a couple of years ago with the N64. they got delayed for too long. It's too expensive. Too difficult to development for. Games cost too much. No launch titles. It's like the N64 all over again.
To be fair to Sony, that's not very different from what they did with the PS2, and that was successful. So perhaps they just...
But PS2 had a better launch than the PS3. I mean, slightly better launch games, at least.
Better, but still, they weren't that exciting. It was a few months before anything came out on the PS2 that was worth playing. I think the real key was that the PS2 at launch was expensive, but it wasn't expensive anything like on the scale that the PS3 is. I mean, PS2 launched. Correct me if I'm wrong, it launched at $300 for the system?
Yeah, that sounds right. I think it's $299.
Yeah, and that was a lot at the time. Video game systems didn't sell for that much. But it's nothing like $599.
No, or, I mean, $499 for the base system with the smaller hard drive. Yeah, that's a lot of money, and I don't know. The thing was, and you know, the PS2 was expensive at the time, but it was also a standalone DVD player, and that was just at the time that people wanted standalone DVD players, and it wasn't that much more expensive than a regular standalone DVD player, and you got the whole PS1 library too thrown in to boot. Whereas, you know, I don't know. I think that there's a limit because nobody's excited about Blu-ray the way that they were excited about DVDs. No one's excited about high-def DVD the way that they were excited about DVDs. High def penetration still at about, what, a quarter of homes, 25%?
Is it that high?
Yeah, I think it's right around there. I mean, they're getting pretty cheap, but, you know, I don't know. I don't think that people are that excited about it because DVD is still fine for most people. I don't think most people who watch TV really care that much about high def, to be honest. Either they have high def TVs.
I agree.
I see my mom all the time watching standard definition channels, even though she has the high def TV and the high def channels. When I go up there, she'll be like watching something, and I'll see her watching it in the standard. I'm like, well, why aren't you watching the high def? She's like, oh, I didn't realize it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, but I think that's the attitude a lot of people have. Whereas when DVDs came out, you know, even my mom was excited about them. People I knew because, well, you didn't have to rewind them. You could skip around wherever you wanted. They had special features. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just the quality upgrade from VHS. I remember people at the time told me, well, VHS looks just as good as DVD. which, you know, patently false, but they didn't wear out after you used them too much. I mean, everyone noticed that about VHS. You know, I like high def. I think high def DVD is going to, or Blu-ray or whatever, is going to be cool, but yeah, certainly not nearly as compelled to go out and buy one the way I was with a DVD player, so...
Yeah, I think if you gave me the choice, you said for exactly the same price, you can have standard def or high def. I can't think of any reason why I wouldn't take high def. But since the only advantage is that it looks a little bit prettier, you're going to have to bring the price down before I'm willing to pay for that. Because like you say, DVD had a bunch of other compelling reasons to switch to this instead of VHS. And it's the same in the gaming market. When we switch to optical discs, I still personally think that the CD-based game systems, the PlayStation and the Saturn and the 3DO, I think they didn't really benefit from the technology because the load times were just insane. And that really was a bigger problem for me than the ability to pack in 4 hours of pre-rendered cutscenes was an advantage.
Well, I mean, yeah, but the fact of the matter is most people who bought the PlayStation were pretty happy with those 4 hours of pre-rendered cutscenes. They liked Final Fantasy VII.
That's true.
Like you can't do Final Fantasy VII on the Nintendo 64 and have it be remotely the same experience.
Which is part of the reason why I liked the Nintendo 64, to be honest with you.
Right. I agree. I thought the load times on the PS1 were killer. Also, the PS2 pretty bad load times. That's mm-hmm. Yeah, load times drive me crazy on console games. I don't know why. I'm just... Especially like games where the rounds are really short. Man, I hate fighting games where I have to wait between rounds to load. That's insane. But yeah, so I guess, you know, a big story, obviously, we sort of touched around it. The new consoles this year, I don't think anyone can stop talking about them, but definitely...
pretty much what the industry is focused on at the moment, and with good reason.
So I thought I'd give a wee update. I talked last time about how I brought it up to my mom's house for Thanksgiving, and it was a big hit with her and my brother. My brother is 21. He had a birthday recently. He's 22, and is big Xbox 360 guy. He thinks the Wii's kind of lame. He's not that into it. I think he grudgingly likes it. He made fun of me for purchasing it, but he's trying to be too cool for school. So, but the rest of my family, when I brought it up for Christmas, my uncle, my grandpa, even he was getting down with Wii bowling because I guess I didn't even know he's a bowler in real life. He used to bowl back in his day, and so he was trying to. Quizzing me about how much English can you put on the ball, and trying to get his hook in, slice it all over the ball. That was pretty cool. He was pretty into it. I think the only problem is still what surprised me watching these people who don't ever play video games play around with it is that the video game conventions they still get stuck with. Between rounds in Wii Bowling, you have to press A to clear your score because it shows you your score, and then you press A to go ahead and bowl. That confused them like consistently. I had to tell them which button A was. They just Whereas the motion, after doing it a couple times, they got it. They could figure that out. But yeah, that A thing, I don't know, they never quite... And we watched every replay because they wouldn't press A to skip the replays. They didn't... it wasn't clear to them they could do that either. Even though it flashes, like, a flashing A button at the bottom part of the screen, they weren't, like, making the connection. Which, I guess to us is funny, but, if you never play video games, there's no reason that you would think that the flashing A means anything at all when you don't realize there's an A button on the controller.
Yep. So I think that's exactly why Nintendo did what Nintendo did with the Wii and with the DS, was because you can't appeal to people who don't play video games by emphasizing how your controllers have more buttons and your graphics are prettier, because that's the controllers having more buttons isn't going to sell to people who don't know what the hell the buttons do.
Right, and it just kind of confuses them. You can't... So if you've never played a video game before, you can't give them an Xbox 360 controller and be like, oh, all right, hit the top trigger button.
Yep.
Hit the top trigger button to reload. All right, now you're going to press the left trigger button to aim, and while you hold that down, you're going to press the right trigger button to shoot, the left bottom trigger button to aim, the left... left, right button, trigger button. It's like just, it gets confusing for me. It takes me a little while to learn the controls when you get a new game. All right, well, you can press Y, B, A. You gotta remember all that stuff. I remember when I first got the SNES, it was hard for me to remember to use the shoulder buttons at the same time as using four face buttons, because we switched from the NES with its two face buttons to the SNES with six buttons you gotta be pressing at all times. So that was, I remember that was a learning curve, and I was experienced with video games at that point in time.
It was a bit of a learning curve for me, too. I think the big problem I had was ever remembering that the X button existed. Because it was so far from where my thumb ever was.
Oh,
I could
really?
cope with Y and B and A, but the X button is like off here and it's like in the Yukon and I have no idea how to get to this button.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have been playing video games for a long time. Just forget how daunting they are if you haven't been playing video games for a long time. Kids can pick it up pretty quick because kids have a lot of time and not much patience, but patience for video games, strange. It's one of the few things that kids will sit down and play for long periods of time. I don't think adults get frustrated too quick. They can't figure it out. They're like, all right, I'm done with this. This is too much like work. I'm going to go do something that's actually fun.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So I hope that Nintendo takes this lesson to heart and reduces menus in the next in their next games that are sort of appeal meant to appeal for pe to more people. People, I think, generally understand using the Wii as a pointer to move around a cursor because they've used computers before, they've used mouses,
Right.
so that's an okay interface. But having to use the face buttons too much, yeah, I'd like to see a little less of that maybe. We'll
Do
see.
you think it would work better if instead of using the face buttons, it mostly relied on the trigger for menu selections?
Maybe. I mean, they use the trigger as like a back or
Okay.
a cancel, but again, that's something that to me makes sense. If A is okay, then B obviously is cancel. But again, that's not at all an intuitive kind of thing. It's something that video games have just drilled into me over time. So.
Exactly, just like what to do with this weird cross-shaped thing and why this makes you move around.
Right.
It
That
makes no
makes you
sense
move.
to a lot of people, but that's because those people don't have 20 years of experience playing games where moving the cross thing makes you move.
Right. And I remember when we first switched over to 3D, I remember having to get used to the controls in Super Mario 64 and how weird
Oh
it was
yeah.
using a little thumbstick. Or do you
Way
remember
back.
playing like the first real 3D games on the PlayStation, like Resident, the original Resident Evil, where you did not have the thumbstick because they didn't have them on the original PlayStation controllers. So you had to use the stupid crossing, navigate in 3D, and you had to like press right and left to turn your character,
Oh, I
and then
know.
forward to go forward. Do you remember how much of a pain that was?
Yeah, I sure do remember how much of a pain that was. That's one of the things that I hated to death about the Resident Evil games, was how awful the controls were.
Right. Well, it got a little better once they moved to analog controls,
Well,
because then you could.
later on, yeah, Resident Evil 2 was still miserable, but
Yeah, that was. Well, that
I
and
think
you
that was.
running toward the camera at all times,
Yeah,
and
that's
having
what
the
got
camera
me.
at your pointed directly at your feet and being unable to see anything you're shooting. Anyway, but that's
We
neither
don't
here
need to
nor
get into
there.
that.
So, any kind of final thoughts on the console wars of 06?
Well, I'd be interested to see what happens with not specifically with the Xbox 360, to be honest with you,
Yeah.
because right now it's sort of the odd man out in the console wars. Everybody's talking about Wii, PS3, Wii, PS3, and partly that's because they're the hot new thing. The Xbox 360's been around for a year. It's not as exciting at the moment. And that'll
Yeah.
settle down, but the Xbox 360 also has it's attracted a core audience, but it hasn't really been big. And I'm wondering if it's going to change that in the future or if it's just going to be hanging around being kind of there for the hardcore shooter crowd.
Yeah, it seems weird because of, I mean, Microsoft has that year leap on the other two and didn't capitalize on it. I mean, the first real killer app for the 360 is Gears of War, which just came out. So, why launch a year before you have any real great games? I mean, there are really some good solid games on the 360, like Oblivion. Though I personally think the best way to play that's on a PC where you have a little more flexibility and freedom and get better graphics, that kind of stuff. But and there've been some other fun 360 games. Certainly, if you like sports games, that's where it's been for the past year. But yeah, I don't know. They don't. It doesn't. Doesn't. I can't figure out what it is that distinguishes Microsoft. Except for they have partnered with the best online service. Live is just awesome. I wish Nintendo and Sony both would rip it off, but they don't seem like they're interested in doing that.
Sony doesn't seem to have any idea what to do about online service.
According to GameSpot, as of next year, I'll be able to download hot music and movies to my PlayStation 3. But that's what Sony told me about the PlayStation 2. I was there at the press conference at E3 when they announced that they're gonna have broadband stuff, which later required you to buy a special adapter, which only really worked for Final Fantasy XI. But none of that ever came to be. There was never any real online service for the PS2. It was the service that did exist was pretty much garbage. There's like just a few games supported it, and the broadband adapter was too expensive. And I mean, so I don't know. Sony still seems pretty vague about what they're gonna do. I remember when Square's online service for the PS2 was gonna be awesome, was going to include like a whole marketplace kind of idea, and it ended up being Final Fantasy XI and not much else.
Yeah. And I remember when Nintendo was talking online stuff for the GameCube and released adapters for it, and the only games that ever ended up using it were the Phantasy Star Online series.
Right. Well, at
And
least all the. Oh, go ahead.
they put out Mario Kart later, which uses the network adapter to connect locally to another GameCube, but you can't play it online.
Yeah,
That made
without
no
hacking it.
sense. That made no sense to me at all.
Yeah, what a missed opportunity. At least all the new consoles have the broadband stuff built in, the connectivity. Hopefully they'll take advantage of it. It does mystify me though why I can't play Wii Bowling with other people on the internet.
Yeah, Nintendo's online strategy with the Wii is a little strange. They seem to want to build it into some sort of system that's totally safe for children at the expense of all usability for the rest of us, which I'm not really big on. I think it would be better if they put it as more of an open network approach with parental controls on it.
Yeah, well, ideally they would just build Xbox Live for the Wii, and let me have like a unique new username that people can contact me with, and then I can meet people and talk to them and add them to my friends list. And I mean, I don't know. I gotta say, one of the coolest things, it's so silly on the 360, is the achievements that you unlock as you if you hook up to Xbox Live while you're playing your game, while you accomplish things, it saves it. And then stored to your profile, and other people can see what things you've unlocked in a given game. It's just, I don't know, it's just kind of cool. And then lots of games put in weird ways to get achievements, and you get special points, and it goes toward this overall score that you have. It's just kind of fun, silly little thing that I would love to see in the Wii, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I agree. I think that's one of the most interesting things about the 360 to me is just that the games have these weird objectives in them that put little flags on your live account. It's not important, and it's not like they send you money if you get enough of them, but it's a fun little thing.
Yeah, it sure is. All right, so I think that covers some of the news stories. You want to talk about some of the notable games of 06?
Sure. For me, the first notable game of 2006 would have to be New Super Mario Bros. On the DS. It was a gigantic success, and it really sort of helped to kick off what turned out to be the year of the DS totally dominating the world. And more than that, it wasn't since Super Mario World launched on the Super Nintendo that we'd had an actual regular Mario platformer like that, and it was really nice to get to play one again.
Yeah, definitely glad to see that at least there's a place for 2D platformers still. Well, the first thing I really got hooked on this year was Oblivion on the PC. It also came out for the 360. And it's just a really free-roaming RPG that it's a sequel to, well, it's actually the fourth game in a series. The third one was Morrowind, and this one was, I played Morrowind, didn't really like it that much. I felt it was too unfocused, and you were just roaming around, kind of doing nothing. Oblivion fixes a lot of the problems I have with Morrowind, a much better combat system, for instance, and it really open-ended. It's cool because all the monsters and all the quests and stuff level up with you, so that wherever you go, things are more or less at your level. So you can do things any order you want, not worry about out-leveling specific areas. It's really fun.
That's kind of nice. I like that as long as it applies to the whole game. I've played games before, most notably Final Fantasy VIII, where all the monsters and things do level up with the character, except the bosses. The bosses are at a static level, so you never have any idea what sort of boss battle you're approaching because the trash mobs match your level, and then you go into the boss, and he's like balanced for 15 levels higher than you are, and you just get wiped out.
Yeah, there's one fight in Oblivion that's kind of screwy like that. You have a bunch of NPCs with you, and they don't scale. So if you're too high a level, all the mobs are at your level, and the NPCs just get slaughtered. So they may have actually fixed that in a patch. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I played it. It only seems like something they would have fixed because that was pretty lame.
Yeah.
But you can just always cheat to get through it if you have to.
That's true. That's true. Cheating is the best. I guess next thing I would want to mention would be, as we talked about before, Half-Life 2 Episode 1, which, as we said earlier in the show, sort of kicked off the episodic content approach to game design. But even more interestingly than that, from my perspective, was just a really damn good game. I don't really care for first-person shooters in general, but the Half-Life series, excuse me, has just been so consistently strong that I really haven't been able to find any major fault with it, regardless.
Yeah, this was on my list too. I loved it. I love shooters, and I really, really, really love Half-Life. Far and away the best shooter franchise out there for my money. But yeah, I'm surprised at how good Half-Life 2 Episode 1 was, despite its terrible, terrible name. Valve, are you listening? Rename these stupid episodes. God.
Oh, but
The original expansion was going to be called Half-Life 2 Aftermath, which is actually a pretty good name. I don't know why they scrapped it in favor of some George Lucas-esque terrible name.
also, if
But.
Valve is listening, please do not scrap that whole thing where you put in the commentaries
Ooh,
about
yeah.
game design, because
How neat is that?
that was one of my favorite things about Episode One. Was after I finished it, I went through, I played the whole game again, I turned on all the cheats just so mobs wouldn't distract me from listening to commentary, basically, and went through the game and just listened to the developers tell me how they made decisions about it and how they implemented things. It was really neat.
Yeah, it is, and it's like watching a movie with the commentary on again, and it's a neat way to see the game again. I do the opposite. I just cranked it on hard the second time, the hardest setting the second time through, and played through with the commentary, and just stopped to listen to the commentary, and then went on with the game. But yeah, if you're interested in game design at all, it's like a must listen because it's just so freaking in depth, and boy, you really get an idea. They're like, okay, and now the cool thing is I'm noticing in this a lot of other games and stuff that they mentioned that I never thought about before, like. Each time they introduce a new enemy or a new skill or something, they first introduce it in a safe way where you go ahead and you see the enemy before you fight it, and then you have an idea what it does. And then it comes at you like just one of them rushes at you in a place where you're well prepared, and then they'll start rushing a couple of them at you or whatever when you're not prepared for it. That way you kind of slowly walk into something, you get the hang of it. As you acquire new skills, they always put you in a safe area first to try out that skill, and they'll put you in an area where maybe if you don't you screw up you die, that kind of thing. And that was you obviously seen that all the time in games, and it's obviously such a fundamental thing about game design I never really thought about.
The thing that really caught my attention in the commentaries to Episode One was in the scene with the Zombine, the same time where he's first introduced and you first get to know him. Also, Alex will makes a really nerdy joke. In fact, it's the whole Zombine thing, and she does sort of a dismissive giggling thing. And the commentary at this point talks about how originally, when they tried this out, all the players who were testing it thought she was laughing at them and making fun of them, and they hated it. And they fixed this by changing the lighting in the scene from red to blue. And that's the
Oh,
only
yeah.
change they made. And then everybody was like, thought she was just being sort of shy and playful. Stuff like
Yeah.
that really intrigues me.
That is cool too, because you could really tell that one of the reasons that game works in general is because you have a sidekick the whole game, Alex, and she's not annoying and lame like most video game sidekicks. And if you listen to the commentary, you can tell they went to great lengths to make sure that she wouldn't be annoying and lame.
And they
That's
definitely succeeded. She
yeah.
did bug me a bit in the first Half-Life 2, but she's not around all the time. But
Right.
in episode, so I knew she was around all the time in episode 1, and so I was a little nervous about that, to be honest with you, because I'm like, she bugged the hell out of me in Half-Life 2. If I have to put up with her all the time, this game's just going to drive me crazy. But she's not at all annoying. She seems like an actual sidekick, not just like some sort of witty one-liner fountain that stands next to you.
Right, she actually is useful. Well, the next one on my list was Dead Rising for the Xbox 360. Not really a perfect game. There's a lot wrong with it, to be honest. It's kind of really frustrates me from time to time. The difficulty is strange. It'll go from being way too easy to way too hard, and then back again to kind of get the hang of it. But it's another kind of free roaming game. It's basically, if you've ever seen the movie Dawn of the Dead, it's the same idea. You're trapped in a shopping mall with tons of zombies, and this town's been overrun by zombies, and you gotta go rescue people and fight insane bikers and criminals and stuff that are also ravaging things. And you can go run any store you want and grab stuff and use it as weapons. And pretty much everything can be used as a weapon, though throwing CDs at zombies not particularly effective, it turns out. But it's just a fun game, and it's cool because it's very, very open-ended with tons of replayability. You can't accomplish everything on just one playthrough, and it's kind of neat because your character levels up as you go, so those stats carry with you over to the next time you play through it. It's just a fun game with an interesting kind of twist on the survival horror genre, which I personally think is way played out. So Dead Rising kind of gives it some much-needed humor and a little bit of lightness, and yeah, it's pretty fun.
I always hated survival horror games myself.
Yeah, I always want to like them and end up hating them.
Yeah, that's basically where I come from. But this one does sound interesting. If I ever find myself with a 360, I'll have to check it out. So my next pick, I guess, would have to be Button Kaitos Origins on the GameCube, which is the sequel, or prequel rather, to the original Button Kaitos, also on the GameCube, which is one of the more obscure RPG series out there. But I think it really adds a lot of life to the whole RPG genre, which, as you said, with survival horror can seem kind of played out at times. Because it's like, how many times do I have to pick attack off the menu and then get experience points and gold and stuff? It's all
right.
It's all the same. But in Button Kaitos, it's really different. And it has this card-based interface where you draw a hand of cards out of your deck and you have some attacks and some defenses and things. And you have just a really short amount of time, and it gets shorter as you raise levels. So the system itself challenges you. And you have just a certain amount of time to pick which cards to play. And it really adds a good element of speed to the game. It really helps it. It makes it feel like it's really important that you act now. Like, I can't sit staring at the menu and decide which spell to cast for a half hour and the mobs will just sit there and wait. I have to make my decisions now, and I have to go quickly, or I'm just going to miss my opportunities.
Yeah, I think probably since we're all playing MMOs these days and they're all pretty action-y, I think you see a move toward more action-y RPGs on console. Even Final Fantasy, whatever the last one was, I guess is a more action-based combat system. They scrapped the old active battle. Whatever.
Yeah, I understand it plays an awful lot like an MMO with no other players, which is part of the reason why I'm wary of it. Though I haven't played it, so I'm not going to talk too much.
I thought your least favorite part of MMOs was other players.
They're simultaneously my favorite and my least favorite part, because there's just such a range, and the good players are a great thing, and the awful players are a terrible thing. So it's...
Yeah, tough. Well, my next title, I'm not going to say a lot about it. Civilization 4 came out. If you love the Civilization series, just you should already own it. If you don't know what the Civilization series is, never mind.
You sure you want to be that harsh? I think it could probably bring some new players into the fold, as it were.
Well, yeah, but honestly, like, if you're at all interested in strategy games, you already know about Civilization.
Okay, that's fair.
And, like, you've probably played it. If you feel like you like strategy games a little bit but haven't played very many of them, just go get Civ 4, because it's just about the best in the Civilization series. You manage an empire starting off in, like, I don't know, sometime in the Stone Age, and eventually build nukes and nuclear being crap out of other people, and it's incredibly addictive and lots of fun, and Civ 4 is pretty great.
Well, I'm going to have to go with Mario and Luigi Partners in Time, also on the DS, which is another entry in the venerable Mario RPG series. And it's great because, much like I was saying earlier with the Button Kaitos games, it's a totally refreshing way to play an RPG. It's not the same sort of menu-driven. This sort of plays almost like a rhythm game with mobs in it, because it all depends on timing. You have to do everything with just the right timing to avoid attacks, and in order to do any damage with your attacks, and especially the special attacks, which are basically all about hitting a whole lot of buttons at the right time. And it's really clever the way it works out.
Huh. Yeah, I need to probably play that game. That has sounded interesting to me. My last real title is Gears of War on the 360, which is not a game I was expecting to like that much. I don't really like console shooters very often. I just can't aim with that stupid thumbstick. I gotta have a mouse. But Gears of War, it's a sort of a third-person shooter, though when you're shooting, it's more or less first-person, because you kind of aim, and it's like right over the shoulder, so basically first-person. But I'm able to put up with the controls just because the rest of the game is so fun, especially when you're playing it co-op. The entire game is designed to be played through with another person, and you can play it through split-screen or through live or hooking up Xboxes or whatever you want to do. And it's a squad-based game, but there's sort of like two main characters in it, so you and another person play those two main characters. And if you ever played Time Crisis 2 in the arcade, you'll get kind of an idea of what it's like, though it's not on rails the way Time Crisis was. You have free motion throughout. You can run around, but any object in the game, basically any slab of concrete or corridor or column, can be used to cover. So you can hide behind it and cover, and you can lean out and aim from behind cover and shoot at things. And also kind of fun, you can just blind fire behind cover. So you just stick your gun out, not your body, and just start shooting. Obviously, you're not very good at hitting things that way, but if someone's just rushing at you and you don't expose yourself to fire, you can just do it that way and kind of make them stop and hide. And really, really clever. It's sort of a sci-fi. It reminds me a lot of Half-Life 2. They stole sort of like the whole setting kind of from a lot of Half-Life 2. But if you're going to steal, you might as well steal from Half-Life 2, because it's the best. But it's just a lot of fun to play with another person. I mean, there's certain parts where you have to split up, and so one person will say take the high path, and everyone will take the low path, and so you'll keep intersecting each other and having to cover the other person from a distance. And there's lots of times in the game where you're like, okay, I'm going to go for the center and hold that. You go around the right and flank the enemy's position and take him out. And so it's kind of got a lot of tactical elements, more like Rainbow Six or something, but not at all with that super realistic one kind of shot and you're dead deal. It's much more like Half-Life, where you take a lot of hits before you die, and you get some crazy weapons. For instance, your assault rifle has a chainsaw built into the bottom of it, so it's like a chainsaw bayonet. So if you want to get up close to somebody, you can chainsaw them to death. Though that's pretty risky because the computer also has chainsaws, and they're probably better at using them than you will be when you start. So you gotta be really careful of letting the computer advance on you. And it's just a lot of fun. You got to constantly be thinking tactically. Okay, I want to move forward. All right, now I'm going to provide suppressing fire so that you can move forward. It's a lot of fun. A really good game that really has to be played multiplayer to really appreciate. But great to see a good cooperative multiplayer game.
Yeah, that's true. Too much multiplayer is just straight deathmatch. And while that can be
Oh,
fun
yeah.
sometimes, a lot of times I'd really rather work on a team and accomplish an objective than just pop down an arena and try to blast everybody else to death, you know?
Exactly. That's what makes MMOs so much fun, is working on a team with other people to accomplish a goal when you're all sort of in tune and you have your strategy and tactics down.
I agree. I agree totally. It also means that you don't have to have every single person is some sort of self-sufficient god. You can have some dude who can take a lot of damage, and some dude who can do a lot of damage, and some dude who can heal a lot of damage. And it's nice to have more of the specialized roles rather than just the one-man army approach.
Well, okay, I agree. Do you have any other games you wanted to mention?
No, I think that'll do it for me
Okay.
for
I
now.
gotta give an honorable mention to Wii Sports, especially Wii Bowling. It's not really a complete game. Most of the Wii Sports titles feel kind of like just tech demos, which I guess they are, but it's still been ridiculously entertaining to play bowling. But I'm pretty much done with it, I think. I'm bowling
Yeah.
above a 250 now, and there's nothing left to do except get a 300, a perfect game, but that's just gonna require a lot of playing and a little bit of luck, so I'm getting a little bored with that, unfortunately. I mean, it's bowling. What kind of depth can you add, I guess?
I don't know. They could add like all sorts of healing spells, I suppose, so you can get the pins to stand back up after you've knocked them down if you don't go fast enough.
That'd be great. Maybe you could add lasers.
Lasers make everything better. Come on.
Were we going to have this episode be shorter than the first one?
I don't recall us planning on that. I think we intended to ignore all the people who complained that the first one
Oh,
was too
yeah.
long.
Everyone said that. Well, yeah, I guess they don't have to listen to the end.
I'm pretty sure they all have pause buttons, though. That's sort of my take on the situation.
That's a good point. I have to agree with you there. They can just stop it or pause it if they're getting bored. I mean, we're not forcing them to listen to it yet.
Not
That day will
yet.
come.
I think that starts with episode 5.
Ooh, we better make sure that's a good one then.
I intended to make sure it was just an hour of incoherent screaming since everybody had to listen to it anyway.
I guess I'm nicer than you are.
I don't believe that for a second. All
I don't
right.
have anything else. That was it for me.
All right, so you want to, before we sign off, you want to take a small stab at what looks exciting next year? Sort of looking forward?
Metroid Prime 3, the World of Warcraft expansion, Burning Crusade. And also the Smash Brothers game, which is the entire reason I purchased my Wii, really. Because I'm just a huge Smash Brothers honk.
Yeah,
What about you?
I have to go. I like all of those. Also, I'd pick, of course, Half-Life 2 Episode 2,
Oh,
which
I
I
forgot. I don't believe that's going to come out next year. That'll get delayed again. I've been down this path with Valve before.
I'm thinking this one's small enough. I don't think it's going to get delayed more than a year. That's basically what I'm thinking.
Let's hope. Boy,
We'll have to see.
Well, I waited like for seemingly forever for Half-Life 2 to come out. So I, well, you
Well,
know, it was going to come out, and then the game got hacked by the Russians or something, and
something like that.
I don't know what happened there. So it ended up coming out, 6 years later.
Well, this one, at least Valve doesn't have to write a whole new engine, and they only have to write about a quarter as much content, so.
Well, they gotta spend all that time recording commentary tracks.
That's true. That's true. Wouldn't that be funny if it got delayed like 2 years because they kept making more commentaries because I said so?
I guess you. I think it'd be pretty funny if Valve were listening to this, actually.
If Valve is listening to this, I would like to give a shout out especially to Chet and Eric and tell them to go update their damn website for a change.
I wonder if anyone else will get that joke. Probably not.
No, probably not, but
All right.
There's always hope. Maybe Chet and Eric will get that joke. Let's look at it that way.
That's right. Or even just Eric, because Chet may not exist.
That's true. He may not. I'm still on the side that says he does, but it remains to be seen. Also, I'd have to pick probably Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yeah,
I hope to death that they change the title, because that's just awful.
Well, it is Nintendo, so I wouldn't hold out your hope.
Yeah. Super Mario Galaxy on the Wii. There we go.
We didn't even mention the Wii name controversy, which was a whole
new
story into itself this year.
That's true.
In the end, it doesn't seem to really matter that much.
I didn't figure it would. I mean, the name Nintendo is what matters. The name of the system is almost immaterial. It has to be different from GameCube so people know it's not the same system, but that's about it.
People are willing to purchase something called the PS3 after all.
Yeah.
That's a pretty... I guess PlayStation is actually a good name. But Sony's deciding now, I think, trying to abandon that as much as they can for just PS3. So, whatever.
And need we mention the Xbox 360? What happened to the 358 Xboxes in the middle?
Well, they weren't that important.
I guess. Microsoft's been on a more hectic release schedule than we give them credit for.
They were just internal releases.
At least they didn't call it the Xbox Vista. Look at it that way.
I think they should have called it the Xbox 180. That would have really won over the Japanese market.
How come?
Well, because, you know, it was a 360 from the Xbox. That's back where you started from.
Ah.
A 180, though, that's completely different.
Maybe they could have called it the Xbox 720 and tried to appeal to fans of old skateboarding games.
Oh, man. That's right. I remember that game. That game was pretty terrible, actually.
Yeah, it was actually thoroughly awful. I played it in the arcade and I played it on the Nintendo, and neither version was any good at all.
That is correct. I always preferred Skate or Die myself.
Yeah, so did I, which is saying something, since Skate or Die was pretty damn terrible itself.
Oh, back in the day, I have to admit, I liked Skate or Die. I thought it was pretty good.
I couldn't get to grips with it, to be honest with you. I barely even made it to an event in that game, much less actually got to participate in the event.
Oh, the good old days.
Yeah, all right. Tell me about it. Also, if I can name one more game on my to-look-out-for list, that would be Super Paper Mario, also on the Wii, which keeps changing... to be fair, what keeps changing is what GameSpot says it is. Probably the game is consistent, and it's just the GameSpot editors don't agree because they're quality like that. It appears to be basically a 2D platformer on the Wii using the Paper Mario sorts of stylings, which... just has tremendous appeal to me.
How is the control scheme going to work on the Wii?
This I can't tell you for sure. I know barely anything has been released about the game. We've seen screenshots, but not any real in-depth play previews about it. If it's a 2D platformer, honestly, it might just use the classic controller or the remote on its side.
Yeah, that would make sense. That'd be kind of cool, though. That'd be really old school.
Oh, yeah. I'd be thrilled.
Because you only have two buttons if you did it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be kind of interesting.
You need the jump button and the run and fireball button.
Well, I guess that's all you need. But, you know, back in Super Mario World, you would use more buttons than that.
No, it didn't really, though. It used the A button to get off of Yoshi and to do the spin jump thing. That's it.
Well, what about, you forget about using the L and R buttons to scroll that sweet map.
Oh, man, you're right.
That was pretty vital. And didn't you have to press, like, L and R at the same time to do something on the map?
Not that I remember.
I don't remember.
It's been a while.
Yeah. But, I was about to say that was a sweet Mode 7 map, but it wasn't, was it?
I don't remember. I don't think it was.
I think it was
flat.
Final Fantasy 2, a.k.a. Final Fantasy 4, had that sweet Mode 7 map, though.
And so did Link to the Past had a Mode 7 map. Or it had a toggle.
Right.
You could have the flat map or the Mode 7 map.
That's right. Well, of course, if anyone's listening to this who doesn't know what Mode 7 is, and why would you? It was that weird pseudo 3D thing. Or not really 3D, just I don't know how to describe it. It was a way of displaying video on the SNES. It kind of had a vaguely three-dimensional look to it, but it was sort of like, only really display flat things like it. So.
Yeah. It was a means of scaling and rotating textures.
Yeah.
Basically, it was designed to make sort of a pseudo 3D appearance, and it did fairly well for 1991. it doesn't fly these days as anything that looks like 3D, but at the time it was pretty good.
No one really used it for anything other than maps, though.
It was used pretty intensively in Star Fox.
Oh, yeah. Well, Star Fox pulled out a lot of weird tricks.
That's true. Star Fox put, like, a processor in the cartridge or something strange like that.
Did it?
The Super FX chip there? Yeah, something like that.
I always assumed that was about equivalent to blast processing.
I don't know. It wasn't as blasty, though.
Oh.
I don't think it could. I don't think Sonic would be able to go as fast
without the blast processing.
You remember when the TurboGrafx-16 came out?
Vaguely.
I remember this is when I was in like fifth grade or whatever at the time, and I definitely remember the schoolyard legend about the TurboGrafx-16 was that you shouldn't play it because the graphics are too fast and they'll make you go blind.
I never heard that one. I didn't get out this way.
That was everyone in my school believed this.
Wow, maybe that accounts for the price tag account for the TurboGrafx-16 being a huge flop. Also, yeah. The lack of games.
Lack of games could have something to do with it. I mean, Bonk's Adventure is playable only so many times.
Oh, speaking of failed console systems, since we're just gonna run as long as we feel like,
and I'm gonna leave it all in and get bitched at for not editing properly.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
I'm going to leave it all in. That's what I'm going to do.
That's right. This podcast is free.
That's basically true. For. I have effectively infinite bandwidth, so what the hell? I'm going to run as long as I please.
Anyway, yeah. I was going to say, I saw strangest thing over the holiday weekend. CNBC, of all places, kept running this video game documentary on the history of video games, and it was kind of crappy. Like they mixed a lot of things up. I mean, when you're talking about the popularity of The Sims and showing screenshots from The Sims online, that kind of says to me you didn't work too hard at your documentary. But whatever. I mean, just seriously, lots of weird little scripts where they're talking about one game and showing screenshots of another. That kind of bugs me. But whatever. I guess they figure most people don't know the difference between Doom and Doom 2, but I do. Damn it, I can tell.
Oh yeah. I would be able to tell at a glance.
Yeah, so, anyway. But they interviewed Trip Hawkins, one of the founders of the whole 3DO thing. He's one of the guys behind that, former EA honcho, and he was talking about part of the reason the 3DO failed. He says, you know, it was $700, and that was another expensive console today, and back when that launched in the early 90s, it was definitely an expensive console, but you know, it had a lot of cool things going for it. It had 3D. Nothing else had 3D at that time, because this was even before the PlayStation and the Sega Saturn. It had good graphics and, you know, sort of probably lacking some killer games. But, well, he said, well, you know, that price tag just killed it. And he said their thinking when they launched it was, well, this is not going to be just a gaming console. It's going to be like buying a hi-fi stereo component, because, you know, at the time it had CDs, and those were nifty back then. No one, you know, you're going to get a cool CD player. And I think probably there's also some plans to, like, video CDs and stuff. None of that ever panned out. But, you know, $700, that's not that expensive if you're buying a piece of home theater equipment. But he said, well, we could never, ever convince anyone that it was anything other than a gaming machine. And I think, I don't know, I think times are different now, but I think Sony's going to have that problem trying to sell the PS3 as something more than a gaming console.
I think you're right. And I think Sony should have figured that out, because they had the same problem selling the PS2 as anything other than a gaming console and a DVD player.
Right. And even shortly into its lifespan, you know, the PS2, no longer a big selling point that it could play DVDs.
Right.
Once everyone had, you know, once DVD players were sub-$100, which was like within a year or so of the PS2, I think, really quick the prices dropped just because demand was so high. You know, then it became about the games. And, you know, fortunately for Sony, the PS2 has some great games for it and the huge PS1 library. I don't know, the PS3, though, doesn't... You know, Microsoft's trying to sell the 360 as a multimedia device or whatever, and I just don't see it working either. People get excited for it for the games. People are excited about the PS3. Well, the people who are excited about it anyway are excited about Resistance and not about watching Goodfellas on Blu-ray. Right.
And they're not... I don't think anybody's buying it because it comes with a free copy of Talladega Nights on a Blu-ray disc. To be entirely honest with you.
Yeah,
I mean even if Sony had picked a good movie that anybody wanted to see, I doubt it would really be the selling point for the system.
Yeah, and just like, you know, and for a little while, the PSP was really bolstered by the whole UMD thing, which fizzled very quickly.
Yeah.
Sales of UMDs really tanked after that brief spurt. So I don't know. I think that maybe I'd have been too late for them to learn from the PSP's sort of dismal. I mean, geez, man. How much longer is a PSP going to be on the market? That's a question for 2007. Do we see the death of the PSP?
Well, a Sony, well, there are rumors anyway. Sony has not confirmed it, but there are rumors that Sony's going to start selling movies for the PSP as in a downloadable format rather than by sticking you with $30 UMDs. And that seems like a logical next step in reinvigorating the market for the system, is cheaper and more
Yeah,
accessible.
maybe, but then you get people buying it as a movie player.
I don't really see it happening, honestly. We talked about it last time. It has an itty bitty screen, and it costs more than a similarly spec'd standalone DVD player. So I
Right.
don't really see it happening.
Yeah, they need some games. I think when we talk about part of the problem with part of the reason the DS has done well compared to the PSP is because people buying the DS are buying it to play these cool games. But if you're buying the PSP to play games, it's really to play like it's because you like the PS2 and you hope that you get Grand Theft Auto on the PSP. But again, those games are much more expensive to make if you're gonna have those. And man, the 3D games on the PSP don't really look that great.
No, they don't.
And so if you got to develop 3D games for the PSP, it's gonna cost you more than develop a quirky 2D game for the DS. And you're much and to boot, you have a much smaller install base than the DS does. So why are you going to spend time trying to develop those sorts of 3D games that PSP users are expecting when you can develop cheaper games that will sell better for the DS?
And pretty much there aren't too many games that would run on the PSP that would not also run on the DS. I mean,
Right.
the hardware specs, the PSP does have a slightly more powerful set of hardware in it, but it's not by a lot. You can't really tell the difference looking at screenshots, except for the size and form factor of the screen, of course. You can't really tell the difference between the two. They look pretty
Right.
much the same.
But the PSP doesn't have two screens or a touch screen. So it seems like, yeah. Of course, it can play movies.
It can. It can. It
And
can
it.
play Spider-Man 2. It comes with that. Or at least it did. I don't know if it still does.
Yeah, I don't think it does anymore. I don't think Spider-Man 2 is still a selling point. But yeah, I wouldn't. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see the PSP die by 2008, just because I think Sony's got to reevaluate what it's doing in the video game business.
I think you're right. I think one thing that's really killing Sony, and it wasn't so hard on them during the PlayStation, the PlayStation 2 generations, is that Sony doesn't have any first-party titles to speak of.
Yeah.
And it has very weak second-party support. And so Sony's been relying entirely on third-party titles. It's been relying on the Final Fantasies and the Dragon Quests and the Metal Gears to sell its systems. And going forward into the PS3, we have Dragon Quest moving off the Sony hardware.
Right, and we don't have a new Final Fantasy game confirmed for anything yet, do we?
I don't think it's confirmed, but I do believe last mention of it was that it was going to be available on all three of the next generation systems.
Even the 360?
That's
Oh,
what I
well.
heard, I think. I
I
may
guess
be
that makes
misremembering.
sense. I mean, really, it surprised me that they didn't do that last generation, just because it's so expensive to develop games, you might as well port them everywhere you can.
Yeah, pretty much. I think one thing that really is going to hold them down on their ability to do that in this new generation would be just the wildly different specs on the hardware. I mean,
True, though they, well,
last
I don't know.
generation systems were all really pretty much the same. I mean,
Yeah,
yeah,
you
I
had a
know.
different media with the GameCube.
That's true, but that wasn't a giant deal. It just prevented you from making games with ridiculous amounts of FMV sequences in them, which of course would have kept out the Final Fantasy series.
Right. And
But
of course, there were a lot of games that had a lot of FMV that got ported over to the GameCube, and they just dropped a lot of the movies.
Right.
Or
But
some of
I
them,
just mean
so.
the specs of the system, like what they can do graphically, what they can do audially, what their processing power is. The PlayStation 2 is a little bit weaker and the Xbox is a little bit stronger and the GameCube's in the middle, but the range isn't very wide.
Yeah, definitely.
But this generation is there's a big difference. I mean, the Wii is vastly inferior from a strict hardware power perspective to the PlayStation 3.
Right.
So if you make a game that really uses the PlayStation 3's power, you can't really port it to the 360 or to the Wii because they won't run it.
Well, I mean, I assume that you can, just requires a little more work.
Well, possibly, but at the same time, you could be using this work to develop the game for other systems in a reduced version, or you could be using it to develop another game. So
Right.
I'm not really sure that would happen, but in order for this to be an issue, of course, the PS3 has to start being dominant. And
Yeah, I think so, or else they won't take advantage of it.
Right, they won't even bother with it. I think one of the
You know, they
things.
might port over to it, but they just won't be
Right.
really maxing out the system.
That's what I mean. It might get ports of other consoles' games, but I don't think it'll see a lot of big name exclusives unless it really starts to sell. One of the things that I think helped the PS2 a lot, or not that helped the PS2, but that helped the other systems get ports of PS2 games, was that the PS2 was the lowest common denominator in the last generation.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I assume that Sony will still be able to finance some exclusives, get some good deals with companies because they have deep pockets. But you know, so is Microsoft, so is Nintendo.
Right.
But Nintendo doesn't seem to be that hard at pursuing third-party exclusive titles like the way they used to. Nintendo seems pretty content with. I mean, well, Nintendo has far and away the best first-party lineup
Oh,
of
yeah.
anybody. I mean, you know, when you have Zelda and Metroid and Mario in-house, I mean,
Yeah.
those all sell.
And Nintendo has good second-party support also. Though not, it's not broad. Nintendo only has like two or three second-party developers at any one time,
Yeah.
but they develop strong titles. And Nintendo's gotten a lot less hesitant to loan out its franchises to other companies to develop software on, like
Yeah, I
with
mean, you know, the Metroid Prime series is a good example.
Retro second party though, so it's a little bit different.
I thought that's what you're talking about.
No, I was talking about farming out franchises to third-party developers. Like Star
Huh,
Fox
hasn't.
Assault on the GameCube, for example, was made by Namco.
Oh, okay, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
That sort of thing. The Zelda games on the portables have since, either since Link's Awakening or since the next one after that, have been done by Capcom.
Well, don't forget the CDI Zelda games,
Oh, that's true.
which were
That's
not done
true.
by Nintendo.
I've been trying to forget the CDI Zelda games,
Man,
but
I
I
remember
haven't
that
succeeded.
when the
Somebody keeps
CDI
reminding me
came
about them.
out, the CDI came out, and they had a Zelda game. I was like, I gotta go buy a CDI. I don't know how old I was. I wasn't old enough to have a job,
Oh
so
no.
I was busy like trying to like scrap money together. It was super. I don't remember how much a CDI was, like $400 or something stupid.
Yeah.
No, maybe it wasn't that much, but it was an insurmountable amount. But man, I wanted that Zelda game so bad. And then I
No.
played it at a store, and I was like, wow, this is terrible. I can stop saving that money. So glad I checked it out before I decided to buy it.
I never
So
actually
not.
got a chance to play it,
You're
unfortunately, but
not missing anything, man.
that's what I'm
Just,
told.
just, just. I wonder if you can actually download a copy of it on the internet somewhere. It might be worth checking out. I've never
I
seen a
didn't.
CDI emulator anywhere.
I've never looked for a CDI emulator, to be honest with you, so.
They have Sega CD emulators,
That's
so they
true.
might have a CDI emulator. I don't know.
I've seen Neo Geo emulators, and that didn't do much worse than the C much better than the CDI.
Well, the Neo Geo was, I mean, they had all the arcade games pretty much the same hardware, so.
Well, that's true.
And, you know, there are a lot of people who are SNK fans for the fighting games.
Yeah. Oh, SNK makes some decent games. The real problem with the Neo Geo was, to touch on a subject we've discussed a lot, it was too expensive.
And the game's also way, way too expensive.
Yep.
Because you're essentially buying arcade games. So I just don't get it. We've seen this before where consoles get too expensive and people just don't buy them.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know how you justify. I don't know how you justify dropping $600 on a PS3 when a Wii is less than half the price.
Well, I think Sony's been saying a lot of, oh, well, it's expensive, but it's really worth it because it has this and this magic feature and it'll make your teeth whiter and do your laundry. But at the same time, I think that's just tough talk from Sony because if you look at their corporate structure, Ken Kutaragi is out as the president.
Yeah,
And
of
he's.
well, of SCEA,
Yeah, yes.
the
Yes,
computer
he's.
entertainment division.
And he's the man who thought up and invented and implemented the PlayStation and the PlayStation 2 and the PlayStation 3. And now, the PlayStation 3's only just come out, and he's been replaced as the president of SCEA, which says to me that Sony knows what a boondoggle this whole thing is, and that all of this that we're hearing from them about how the price is justified because it's so great is just Sony trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Yeah, I don't know what they're gonna do either. It just doesn't seem like there's any real easy way for them to rectify this. If you know, I would say that they could come up with a cheaper version that like didn't have Blu-ray or didn't have all these extras, but they can't because I mean they have to have Blu-ray basically. They're locked
Yeah.
into it. The
Yeah.
price of that's gonna drop, but they have to have that stupid cell processor, which I don't know, maybe will work. But those are the two big expensive components. Everything else is relatively cheap, but It's not gonna, and they're selling it at a loss at $600.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I
All
mean.
consoles have always sold at a loss since the Nintendo Entertainment System. But the loss that Sony's selling it at is just monstrous. It's like
See, I know actually. I don't know if
$300.
that's true. I've heard that. For instance, Nintendo doesn't sell consoles at a loss.
Nintendo always used to. If they're not selling the Wii at a loss, it will be the first console they've made that they haven't.
Well, see, I heard that they that that well, I don't know. I've heard different things. I've heard that Nintendo was never selling consoles at loss. You
Well,
know,
I can
so.
look into it. Maybe we can get a more conclusive report for next time. But to my understanding, Nintendo's the company that invented the practice.
Huh. So I understood that what happened actually in the Saturn PS1 era. It was that particular contest. Because one of the things that helped cream the Saturn was that the PlayStation was like $100 cheaper than the Saturn.
Yeah.
And it helped really just kill the Saturn. And I understand that Sega was actually asking retailers to sell the Saturn at a loss to the retailer. They're
That's
saying, okay, look,
classic.
take a $10 loss in each console, make it up with games. And the retailers weren't that interested
I
in
wonder
doing that.
why.
Yeah. So that was one of the things. I guess that really burned out a lot of retailer support for Sega, was that they would ask them to help. So come on, guys, help us out with this. Help us out.
Yeah,
And
Sega always just seemed like it had no idea what it was doing.
well, the Genesis was pretty well marketed, I thought. I
Oh,
always thought.
it sold a lot of units, but the Genesis had the big advantage of coming out in 1988, was it? With the Super Nintendo nowhere in sight and just boasting considerably better graphics.
Yeah, but
That's.
even when they were both out, there were some compelling reasons to get a Genesis, even when you had a Super Nintendo. I mean, fighting games, for instance.
Yeah.
Just part of a, you can take Mortal Kombat on the SNES with green blood and terrible fatalities, or the real version on the Genesis.
But at the same time, Mortal Kombat wasn't a good game, no matter what system you were playing it on.
It was okay. I don't know. Mortal
That
Kombat
was
2, I thought, was a
crap.
pretty good game. Mortal
Mortal
Kombat 2 was a
Kombat
pretty
2
good.
was a pretty good game, but Mortal Kombat 2 also wasn't censored on the Super Nintendo either.
True.
Most
The
of the
problem with the
first one, and the
Genesis was to
first
play
one's
fighting
crap.
games, you had to go buy a 6-button controller. That was
Yeah.
really, that was a real pain.
It was a pain.
I
I, you
remember
know
doing
what?
that.
Since we're doing SNES versus Genesis again, I think that's probably our cue to wrap it up. What do
Okay,
you think?
that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. We're way long anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us again on the Darien Cast. We'll see you again next time we decide to record one, when we'll talk more about the relative merits of the Super Nintendo and the Genesis. Until then, that guy over there is still Steven, and last time I checked, I was still Darien, so we'll catch you later.